Aaron, in case you don't know me. Welcome to the Good Shepherd Mission. It's great to be here. And if you haven't been here in the past few weeks, or if you're new for the first time, you may feel like you're joining into a conversation that has already started. And nobody likes that feeling, so let me try to catch you up to date a little bit. We've been going through the book of Ruth together. It's a great little story. It's kind of early in the Bible. If you want to turn there with me, it's on page 257. And the Bible's in front of you. And we've been talking a lot about how God uses the faithfulness of ordinary people to accomplish his extraordinary purposes. God uses the faithfulness of people like you and like me to do great things. That's really the theme of this. And there's actually something, it's kind of like, there's something that's been cooking slowly over the last few weeks, kind of simmering, like in a slow cooker. You ever cook in the slow cooker and it's like 10 hours in, you just smell it through the whole house and it's like, oh, that smells amazing. Just want to lift the lid off of that and take a smell. Well, that's going to be a little bit of what happens today because something has been simmering away, not for 4 weeks, but over the course of this story that we haven't even tasted yet, but we've begun to smell a little bit of. And we're going to pull the lid off today and we're actually going to taste. And I just love the fact that the restoration project has its furniture over here. I was going to ask for this visual aid, but it seemed like it was going to be too much. And then they did it anyways, which is just such a great God thing. But we're talking about the theme of restoration. This amazing idea that God takes and not only redeems things, but turns them into new things. The idea that in the midst of that, there's restoration that brings a greater value than maybe originally. You know, if you took some old furniture over here or a pallet, that bench over there is made out of just pallets that somebody found. If you took something like that and you bought it, that would be one thing. But if you actually restore it to its original value or even add greater value, some of these things are selling for way more than they were originally worth. That's restoration. And that's just amazing. So you may feel, you know, this sounds great, but I've got places in my own life that feel totally broken and totally messed up. And I could use some restoration. You might actually feel that. Or you may look at the world around us and just say, gosh, it's just so hopeless and it seems so broken and so in need of restoration. And that's good because it shows us that the book of Ruth has something to say to us today. The story that God's been sort of simmering in this slow cooker all along has something that says hope and restoration for us right now. So maybe you feel like there's a situation in your life that's just so utterly broken and in need of restoration, it seems like there's no longer any hope. And if that's the case, let me remind you of one of the story's main characters. It's Naomi. In chapter 1, in the first few verses, her life suddenly takes a turn. She loses her husband. She moves to a foreign land because of a famine. She's a refugee in a foreign country, and she loses her sons. And she's left with two of her daughters-in-law. And she it's so bad that she actually calls herself bitter and empty. But you know what? God is good. As she returns to her hometown in Bethlehem, 10 years later, Ruth, her daughter-in-law, also a widow, commits to a life of enduring loving kindness alongside her. And then in chapter 2, we talked about how God is good again when Ruth goes out to find food and work and ends up taking refuge under the provision and protection of a close family friend named Boaz. And then in chapter 3, we saw again how God is good again to Naomi. And Boaz and Ruth, together, they hatch a daring and courageous plan to not only provide an heir for Naomi, but to find a redeemer, someone close enough in the family who's willing to buy back Naomi's dead husband's land in order to keep it in the family. Okay, so chapters 1, 2, and 3. But you know, God is so good, and he loves it when we return to him. These have been some of our themes we've talked about. Our return. He loves it when we find refuge in him. But he doesn't just want to redeem things. He doesn't just want to buy it back. He wants to restore all things. And that's the story that we get in chapter 4. It's beautiful. So redemption, it would mean buying back something old. But restoration means adding value back to it, bringing it to an even greater glory. So we're going to look at that together. So chapter 4, we got kind of left at a cliffhanger moment at the end of chapter 3. Do you remember that? Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens. It's kind of like watching an episode of Broadchurch, not just an episode, at least a season where you're kind of left hanging, what happens next? And then we come into chapter 4, and we find out with these questions that are sort of open questions. Who's going to end up redeeming the situation? Is it going to be Boaz, or is it going to be this other unnamed relative? And how's it all going to end? And chapter 4, if we look at it, just as I get into reading it here, we're going to walk it through together, but there's really two scenes, okay? There's two places where this whole story unfolds. One is kind of a legal setting. It's outside the town gate. It's really a gathering of elders. It's mostly men. And it's the legal court of law. It's kind of ad hoc family court. So for those of you lawyers out there, we are going to court this morning. Is that exciting? You guys wake up this morning for a courtroom drama? Sound good? Second setting for this chapter is in Naomi's living room. It's really kind of like a baby shower. It's what we call it in America. Maybe a reception or a Thanksgiving for a new baby. And that's with a lot of the women in the town. So we've got those two settings, and we're going to jump right in and go for it, okay? Let's look at this together. Meanwhile, verse 1, Boaz went up to the town gate, and he sat down there just as family guardian he had mentioned came along. And Boaz said, come over here, my friend, and sit down. So he went over and sat down. And here's where Boaz gathers together an ad hoc family court right here on the town gate. This is how legal arrangements were made in this setting, in this time. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town, and he said, sit here. And so they did so. They all take their seats. And then he said to the family guardian, notice that there's no name for this guy. Out of all the names that we get in this entire story, this particular person doesn't get named. This is interesting. So we'll call him Mr. No Name. He says to the family guardian, Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So he lays out his case. Boaz is a great prosecutor, by the way. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. And if you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am the next in line. So the case here is that the idea that if Naomi sells this land, then the person who is supposed to redeem it will take under them their responsibility, their obligation to care for Naomi. And this sounds to the Mr. No Name like a good deal, right? Land, I can add value to my property. Naomi's a widow. She's got no heirs. That means I can increase my land, and it's kind of a bargain. Spend a little bit now, have more extra for my family. This sounds like a good deal. There's no risk because Naomi has no children, no heirs. So he says, I will redeem it. And then Boaz adds a little clause to the contract. He kind of proceeds forward with his prosecution, and it adds a little bit of a twist. On the day you buy the land from Naomi, he says, this is verse 5, you also acquire Ruth, the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. So here's the clause. Ruth comes along with the land. Now, in case you're concerned, this is a bride purchase. This is not what's happening. It's a legal setting where land is being sold. And the idea of land in this time and in this day was that you wanted to keep it in the family name. So to keep the family name going, Ruth comes along with it, and she's of age to be able to have an heir. And that keeps the land, if she has children, in the family, okay? Now suddenly there's a moment of tense silence. Because Mr. No Name suddenly realizes Ruth's young enough to have a baby. And that means I could spend all this money that I have now, weaken my own inheritance I'm giving to my children, potentially have more mouths to feed if she has babies, and end up dividing the whole thing amongst all of these kids. That's not a good deal. That is not going to work for me. And at this, the family guardian, verse 6, says, then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it, I cannot do it. In other words, I can't afford it. Maybe he's willing, but he doesn't feel he's got the ability to do it. It would ruin his fortune by slicing the pie that he was hoping to hand out to his kids differently. So he says, you go for it. And we get this great little clause here in verse 7. Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So we get this great little clause here about how things are done. Here what happens is is as he takes off his sandal, I looked into this, and there's actually other places where if you're selling land, you sort of take your foot off the land and take the buyer of the land's foot on and put it on the land. Okay, you just sort of pick up their foot and place it on the land. So it's this idea of feet are important, and this transaction up here, I'm giving away the right to redeem this. I'm going to give you the sandal as kind of a token of that, because nothing else is exchanged, right? We get receipts, we get paperwork. Here, the paperwork and the rubber stamp is the sandal. By the way, bear that in mind as you're prayer walking today, right? As we walk, as we kind of take steps, we're reclaiming, redeeming, restoring the places that we walk. So the family guardian says to Boaz, you buy it yourself, and he removed his sandal. He's passing on the right of redemption back to Boaz. He says, I can't do it. So the rubber stamp has been inked. Let's do this. Let's make this a formal ceremonial occasion. And then Boaz announces to the elders and all the people, look at how he gets it very clear. And I want you to listen especially for, in this whole text, how people matter, right? The names and the people, the family matters. Also, place matters. In Israel, land and inheritance and property is of huge importance. So people and place. And then also there's a purpose, there's a destiny behind the way things get named and described. Okay, so if you need a couple of toeholds on the passages we look at this, listen for those. How place is of significance, people and family is of significance, and the purpose is of significance. Boaz announces to the elders of all the people, today you're the witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. So everything, total restoration, not just Naomi's land, Elimelech's land, but the whole family's land. I've also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife. And here's why. In order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. It was one of the worst things that could ever happen to a family in Israel, was for there to be no heirs or descendants and for the family name to die out and for the land to be lost. Land was of such value. So the reason Boaz does this whole thing and sort of hatches this plot with Ruth in chapter 3 is to come and redeem and restore this family's name, to help them hold on to their land. And he rubber stamps it. Today, time stamp, right? Today you are the witnesses. And then the elders and all the people at the gate, they say, we are witnesses. And they launch into this beautiful blessing, a poem really, a blessing on this new family. We are witnesses. May the Lord make the wife, the woman who is coming into your home, like Rachel and Leah. Now, that's an interesting one. They suddenly affirm the fact that Rachel and Leah, these were some of the founding mothers of the family of Israel. See, the people matter here. The family matters. And may she be like that, who together built up the house of Israel. Verse 11, and may you, Boaz, have standing and Ephrathah, and be famous in Bethlehem. May you be famous in this place. So reputation and purpose and influence and destiny is all here. Through the offspring that the Lord gives you by this woman, may your family be like that of Perez, one of the leading families of Israel, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Now, why are we talking about Perez and Tamar and Ruth and Leah? I think it's a hint of a greater destiny that's been simmering in this story all along that we're about to get to. Okay, so just a smell of a hint of what's to come. They bless him. They bless this family, and they bless the people, the place, and the purpose behind this whole legal transaction. You know, I think there's a moment here that we can stop and compare and contrast, just for a second, Mr. No Name and the decision that he makes and Boaz. You know, the redeemer here, the family guardian, he plays it safe. He looks at it and he plays it sensible, doesn't he? And in many ways, he makes the logical choice. It's kind of like in chapter 1. Orpah, the daughter-in-law that doesn't go back with Naomi, she turns back and goes back home to Moab. Mr. No Name here, he plays it safe. It's logical. It's the right thing for his own children. But Boaz takes on a risk and demonstrates a committed loving kindness to others. This is what we've talked about the last few weeks. Boaz takes a choice that's risky. It's at great personal cost to him. You say, wait a minute, hold on, I don't see it. I mean, Boaz gets extra land. He gets the girl. How does this even work, right? Well, he's actually spending a part of his wealth at great risk to care and restore for her fields, Naomi's fields. And he's also spending part of his wealth to take on the care of Naomi the widow. But here's the other thing. It's a huge plan of risk because he doesn't even know that Ruth could bear children. Remember that she had been married for 10 years back in Moab and never had children at all. So he's making this whole plan, wondering if she'll ever bear a child at all. I wonder if there's a word here for us, just in the midst of this kind of legal transaction. It just seems kind of weird and ancient and out of date. You know, a couple of weeks back, we talked about our response as a community to refugees, how we welcome foreigners and outsiders into our midst. And right now, the world is really weighing this kind of question. Is it too risky? Can we really do that? Will it be at our own expense of safety or comfort? We can make choices that benefit us and increase our influence or destiny. We can choose a path that's predictably safe. But right here we see the way of Ruth, really, the courage, the boldness, and the way of Boaz is to choose the way of risky, sacrificial love. We've talked about it the last couple of weeks, hesed, for the benefit of others. And, you know, if the refugee thing just seems too distant, like it's a headline and it's just too abstracted, let me ask you this question. Where in your life right now are there places where you are being called to take risky, sacrificial love for the benefit of others? And maybe a better question than where is who? Who around you needs that loving kindness? You know, this is what marks the family of God, committed followers of Jesus, as we're really separate and we're different. We follow in the way of Jesus' self-sacrificing, loving kindness. We believe Jesus emptied himself of his own fortune on our behalf to become one of us. This is the whole story of Jesus, why we talked about Jesus every week as we've talked about Ruth. We believe he lived a blameless life of loving kindness and serving others, and it was often the people that we least expected it to be. You know, it was children. It was tax collectors. It was prostitutes. It was the poor. And we believe he suffered on our behalf on the cross, gathering us under his wings of protection, and he stretched out his arms and died in our place. And it didn't just stop there, because God is in the restoration business. Jesus defeated death itself, rising out of the grave 3 days later, to show us what a victorious, resurrected life of resurrection and restoration looks like, and to invite us into it. This is the way of Jesus. So the choice is ours. Will we make the safe choice or choose the risky choice of loving kindness like Ruth, like Boaz, like Jesus? All right, let's keep going. Got a little bit more to cover here. We fast forward a little bit. Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive. I love that verse. The Lord enabled her to conceive. Jesus, or God, breaks into the story here, and divine destiny starts to arrive, and we can see it clearly. She gives birth to a son. And now we change locations. We're at a reception. We're at Naomi's house, and the women of the town come over, and they're celebrating. And they're bringing gifts, and they're proclaiming this beautiful song of praise. They say, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a family guardian." Now, is that Boaz? No. The family guardian here is the baby. The only place in the Old Testament where this term is actually referred to someone who's not an adult. The family guardian is this child. May he become famous throughout Israel. See the purpose there. The reputation, famous like his mother Ruth, famous like his father Boaz. He will renew your life. And here's where we get this word, this theme of restoration. Another translation uses the word restore. It kind of means, to translate it would mean revive your spirits. He will revive your spirits and sustain you in your old age. Naomi, here is the son that you've waited for, who will look after you when you're old. Not only just feeding you and taking care of you as you get old, but actually the one who will restore the family line, keep the land under your family name, restore the name of Elimelech. How amazing is that? And why is he going to do it? Is he going to do it because it's a legal transaction and it's kind of his duty as a family member? No, here's why. Look at this. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth. It's the love of Ruth, the loving kindness of Ruth that's been present all through the story that enables this child to care for Naomi. I love that Ruth gets called better than seven sons, right? I mean, in the midst of this, the story that's so heavily weighted towards patriarchy, you get Ruth being weighted at a value that's even greater than the ideal number of sons, right? Seven sons can care for a widow long into their life. But Ruth is weighted better than seven sons because of her faithful loving kindness. Look at what happens next, verse 16. Naomi took the child into her arms. This translated would really mean takes the child and holds it so close, almost like she's nursing, right? But she's grandma. She's not mom. In fact, why aren't Ruth and Boaz at this Thanksgiving? Somebody notices it. It's verse 17. The women living there say, Naomi has a son. Wait a minute. Hold on. Why is this Naomi's son? And really what it looks like is, in all intents and purposes, Naomi is the foster mom. Ruth and Boaz aren't even in the scene. Naomi gathers this son together, and this really is a child that carries her forward into history. Naomi has a son, and they name him Obed, which means servant. It means worker. He serves God's purposes for Naomi's life, yes, but actually for a much bigger story that we're just beginning to get a glimpse of. So we fast forward really quickly. Here's a moment. It's almost like in movies when you zoom out of the window of the scene where you're finishing the movie, and then you kind of get the house, and then you zoom up and you sort of get the street. If you zoom a little further back and you get the city. See, all of a sudden we fast forward into time, and it says he was the father of Jesse and the father of David. And we get this curtain call right here at the end, this cast of characters that's, usually you get family trees like this that are at the beginning of stories. Well, here it's at the end of the story to actually say the blessing of loving kindness extends, it carries on generation to generation. The family tree actually says that this extends beyond, and the restoration that begins to happen here of Elimelech's name and his family line, this whole plot that's been hatched, that's been successful because the Lord has enabled her to conceive, it extends generation after generation. What you get here is in this genealogy, verses 18, 19, 20, 21, is really, it's a royal pattern. It's all leading up to the final name, which is King David. And usually in these kinds of patterns, you'd leave out a few different generations. That's why the math doesn't totally add up. But you leave out a few different generations to put people in key spots. And the key spot's always number seven, right? And so look who's in the seventh spot. It's Boaz. He gets the place of honor. You know, I think I want to take us a little bit further back. We've zoomed out. We've gone up above the city, but I think if we zoom out a little further at the end of this movie and we pan maybe the whole world, we'll see a little bit more of what God's been up to this whole time through this whole story. Because as it turns out, the simple rural story of a family back in ancient times turns out to be much bigger than gleaning or winnowing barley on the threshing floor. It's bigger than Boaz's cold feet. It's bigger than the corner of his blanket. It's bigger than sandals being traded in a legal transaction. It's a story that shows something much, much bigger that's at stake. So go with me to Matthew chapter 1. It's page 913. We just jumped from Boaz and Obed to David, the king of Israel. But there's a much bigger story going on. It's the story of restoration of an entire people. And there's a few people we would leave out if we didn't look at Matthew chapter 1, especially at this time of year. I mean, this is all about babies being born in Bethlehem, right? So let's go for it. Let's look at Matthew chapter 1. And if you think I'm going to read all these names to you, you're mistaken. Family trees are interesting. Some of us can geek out more than others. But here's the point. Let's look at some of the names that don't often get a lot of publicity. What do they mean? The genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac, the father of Jacob. Jacob, the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah, the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Wait a minute, who's Tamar? Well, you know what? She's from Canaanite. She's a Canaanite. She's a Gentile. And she ends up dressing like a prostitute to be able to conceive a child with Judah. Well, that's kind of interesting. And you get Perez, the father of Hezron, and Hezron, the father of Ram, and Ram, the father of Amminadab, and Amminadab, the father of Nesheh. I told you I wouldn't read them all. But look what you get. Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Now, Rahab, Boaz's mom, who's that? Well, she turns out to be a prostitute in Jericho who helps the spy in the story of Joshua. So she's another Gentile. Okay, this is getting kind of interesting. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Ruth from Moabite, the Moabite from Moab, a refugee, a woman who couldn't have any children. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. You keep going, you get another woman, Solomon's mother, Uriah's wife. She's Bathsheba. Why, in the midst of all of this genealogy, the Jesus family tree, do we get women who are foreigners? Could it actually be that this is a huge deal, especially if you're a part of a blood kinship culture? Would people really care who you are and where you came from? Here's the point. Jesus of Nazareth, the Messiah, he's got the blood of nations, all peoples, in addition to Israel, coursing through his veins. Matthew starts the story of Jesus' life saying, Ruth plays a part in this. Rahab plays a part in this. Tamar plays a part in this. Foreigners, women, some of them of ill repute, adulterers, David, right? Bathsheba. I think it tells us Jesus brings restoration to all nations, to all people. The gospel of Ruth is that foreigners and refugees belong in the family of God. Isn't this amazing news? The good news is for foreigners. The good news is for refugees. The good news is for prostitutes and for adulterers, for women and for men, and it's for the people that nobody else wants to consider or count. And Matthew counts it. He says Ruth matters in the family line of Jesus. Jesus' restoration is for everybody. It's for all who call upon his name, those willing to return to him, to find refuge in him, and to come under the wings of his redemption. This is the good news. Can I zoom out one more time? Would you mind? Let's zoom out from seeing the whole all nations under restoration to the end of time. Let's go to Revelation chapter 21, page 1181. I mentioned earlier that people are important, place is important, and the idea of a famous name is important. That's what we learned in chapter 4 of Ruth. But God is in the restoration business, and I don't want us to miss out on this, because it goes from a tiny little family in the dark corners before an empire, all the way zooming out to the person of Jesus, and then to this final picture of restoration. Verse 1 of chapter 21 in Revelation. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, and for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. Think of Naomi's tears. Think of the tears of refugees today. Think of your own tears. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. Verse 5, he who is seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. And then he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. And he said to me, it is done. And then he gives his name to the family tree. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give water without cost from the spring of the water of life. Those who are victorious will inherit all of this. This is our inheritance as overcomers, restored by the suffering King. And I will be their God, and they will be my children. Let me pray for us. God, what a story. What a story that you invite us into, even today. I ask for those of us here that you would once again shelter us under your wings, redeem us, and restore us. We are in such need of redemption. Our sin has broken relationship with you, and yet you have provided a way. We thank you for the faithfulness of ordinary people. But you are a good God with good plans for each of us as we trust in you. Would you work out your work of restoration in our lives, in our midst, in our community here, in this church, as we prayer walk the neighborhood, your work of restoration to the streets around us and the people's lives whom we pass. For your name's sake and for your glory, Alpha and Omega, beginning and end. Amen.